Yeah, it seemed even earlier than usual, but.
Okay, well, welcome.
We are.
Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you for the time in this committee. This is the second stop. We've been at Judiciary and now at State and Local Government. My bill, 803, has to do with Statute 403. It's the technical and operational oversight of two public safety emergency communications networks, the 911 network, and then the statewide radio network that's called ARMOR now. You might know it as the 800 megahertz system. There's a need to expand and update the authority of the statewide radio board to try to incorporate the latest interoperable emergency communication technologies under the board's oversight structure. Currently, this board is a model governance structure that allows the regional elected officials and the radio users to influence all of the emergency public safety communications. This expansion would allow the statewide radio board to include the latest emergency communication technology. 911 is changing rapidly, so we need to try to improve that, as well as allowing the federally recognized tribal governments to, at their request, be integrated into the radio board structure. Expanding the authority, and it's important to note that this would not change the 911 fee at all. And expanding the authority of the board to act as what would be known as the Emergency Communications Board would ensure that the voice and data public safety communications would be the same statewide. It would meet the current needs of the public and meet minimal operational and technical standards that would ensure the immediate and accurate emergency responses to 911. I have with me today Jackie Mines. She's the director of the Emergency Communications. And if you want to go ahead. That's
welcome,
okay,
Ms. Mines, to the committee. And go ahead and introduce yourself for the tape and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jackie Mines, and I am the Director of Emergency Communication Networks, which is a division of the Department of Public Safety. Our mission is to fund and support interoperable public safety-grade communication solutions that permit public safety officials, emergency personnel, state and federal. System. That board then has regional radio boards who are instrumental in identifying the issues and how to use the system. As we move forward with next generation 911, which is an upgrade to the existing 911 network to make sure that we have better location for wireless devices, we feel strongly that there is going to be a need to have a statewide plan that the regions adopt and that we develop some standard use examples for those regions on how to deal with new feature applications such as text to 911, those kinds of services that we see coming along the horizon. We worked with the wireless carriers and the carriers in Minnesota, MTA, to review this statute. We incorporated some changes from them, and we will continue to have them on a next generation committee that serves under the statewide radio board if this becomes an emergency communications board. And with that, I'll take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Mines. Is this something that's been ongoing for several years, or is this something that typically finds its way to the committee on a yearly basis? I mean, with technology, I'm sure it's difficult keeping up, but yet I'm sure you have to have a good regional approach, maybe even beyond the state borders. Give me a little insight on how we got to this point.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the statewide radio board's been around for probably since 2005. I'm not exactly sure on that date, but at the inception of the state's plan to build out a statewide radio system for emergency communications. And with the advent of wireless 911, we adjusted the existing network to take those calls in. But in more rural areas or places like the Boundary Waters where there are not a lot of cell towers, it's more difficult to find and accurately locate people. So there's been a nationwide initiative to move forward with updating 911 networks, and standards-based organizations are determining those standards and working with various stakeholders that provide this service for us. So we've been engaged on a national level with those standards-making bodies and with our vendors that provide 911 services to make sure that we're working on an upgrade plan that will be in line with those national standards.
Thank you. Any questions from the members? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have in here topical advisory committees that you may establish one or more advisory groups. Example of advisory groups that are being, they don't mention them per se, but it's just in a general way.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the different advisory groups under the statewide radio board that exist today are an operations and technical advisory team, a committee for interoperable communications, those that are on the armor system and those that are not need to make sure we can communicate back and forth. There is also a finance committee and a legislative committee. We anticipate that we would add to that structure a next generation 911 advisory committee.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Why do we have to put it in statute?
Ms. Mines.
That we have to have, why can't you just use these advisory groups? And to me, it seems simple without having to go through the rigmarole putting into black and white.
Ms. Mines.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the constituencies and stakeholders requested that we officially change the name to an emergency communications board to incorporate all emergency communications. Today it is just a radio board. And for purposes of making sure that people feel comfortable and we get buy-in statewide, we would like to make sure that it's reflected in statute. I think the Minnesota Sheriff's Association felt a little more comfortable if it was incorporated in statute and made very clear that this was an emergency communications board that incorporated more than just the radio.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
And the last, you have a repealer in here. What specifically is being repealed?
Senator Anderson, I think there is a page, is there not, in the back, in the appendix?
One R.
Is that correct? Could you... The very last page, did you notice the appendix?
So, Mr. Chair, yes. We're getting rid of the county being part of this?
Ms. Mines?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we are not getting rid of the counties being part of it. Some of the statute is outdated just because of the changes in the current radio board structure as well as regional board structures. Some of the regions... just to give you an example, one of the reasons we call out specifically allowing... tribal nations to be part of a regional radio board is because in some regions their county attorneys think that that is part of the existing statute, and in others they were hesitant to add those members to the regional radio board without it being in statute specifically identified. So there are some sections of this statute that are just out of date. But we are not looking at changing the makeup of the regional radio boards, county participation, or the state board itself.
Thank you. Any other questions for testifiers? Seeing none, is there a motion? Senator Johnson moves that Senate File 803 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator
Mr.
Jensen.
Chair,
Ms. Mines.
Thank you.
Senator Housley, do you want to chair next?
Oh, sure.
Rotating chairs this morning. Because I'm tired. Why am I tired? Stop partying. It was a real party last night. Senator Thomas. Don't get to chair because you talked to me.
We have Senator Scalzi with Senate File 843. You have, you'll go over a bill and offer the amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Yes, this is my bill, Senate File 843, and I also have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment that you have in your packets, to get the bill in the shape that I'd like to have before I present the bill. So I would move the 843A1 amendment.
Senator Scalzi has moved the one amendment. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, the question is on the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye. All opposed say all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say no. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. My bill, Senate File 843, is related to local government improvement. For construction projects. City councils, when they want to do a construction project for a building improvement, they're required to advertise for bids for the improvement in a newspaper. This bill would also allow city councils to advertise their bids in a recognized industry trade journal as they're defined in the bill. It's defined as a printed publication, digital publication, or website containing building and construction news for state contractors. The bill is non-controversial, and the Minnesota Newspaper Association finds the language acceptable. It's also being presented by the League of Minnesota Cities. And I have here with me today Patrick Hines from the League of Minnesota Cities. We were hoping also to have Steve Albright, who's the Public Works Director from Burnsville in Senator Hall's district. He's a proponent of this bill, but with the juggling of the different schedules, he was unable to make it this morning. So I have here with me Patrick Hines from the League of Minnesota Cities to present the bill.
Mr. Hines?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Patrick Hines with the League of Minnesota Cities. This bill was brought to us by our member cities and public works directors specifically, and it's a very limited bill. Under current law, local units of government are already allowed to advertise for bids on websites. And under Chapter 429, which is the special assessment chapter, they're also allowed to advertise for bids in what was called a trade paper. And the definition of trade paper in Chapter 429 is really out of date, and there just aren't trade papers as defined in the statute left anymore. And the current industry practice is to advertise and solicit for these bids on websites that are specifically designed for bid solicitation. It's much cheaper for cities, it's easier for contractors, and they do a great job of getting bids out to as many people as possible, which is the point of doing the bid solicitation, so you get the cheapest bid possible. So what the bill does is it simply defines recognized industry trade journal. It expands the definition, it makes it more modern, and would allow these bids to be published on these websites. As Senator Scalzi mentioned, the Newspaper Association has no objection to the legislation. I think it really just clarifies what everyone thought would happen and would be the common practice. I'll also point out the bill makes no changes to any of the notice or hearing requirements related to special assessments. So the improvement hearings, the mailed notice to residents, the resolution passed by a board, none of that has changed. It's really limited just to soliciting the bids from contractors. And I'll also speak briefly to the A1 amendment. This was language that we worked on with the Newspaper Association. It simply asks the reviser to review the statutes related to qualified newspapers and to advertisements of bids to see if there are any other inconsistencies in the statute and would report back in January of next year. I've spoken to the reviser's office about it. They were okay with the language. They recommended the January 15th date, and they also said there's no fiscal impact for them doing this. So I will be happy to stand for any questions, and I would just like to thank Senator Scalzi and Senator Hall for authoring the bill.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, and either of the people there,
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, the intention of the amendment is to see if there are inconsistencies between various areas of statute that require publication. For instance, the main statute, main chapter of law that deals with publication of notices is Chapter 331A. That defines qualified newspapers and lays out a number of procedures. But there are other sections of statute that have their own, and this bill is an example of that. The special assessment chapter had its own language. It used the phrase trade paper, while 331A used recognized industry trade journal. So the reviser's instruction is really doing what we've done with this bill and just broadening it to see if there's anything else out there that could be fixed.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, there are limited circumstances in which a city or county can use websites for publication. Transportation, there are certain transportation projects that you can use notices for the projects. And like in this bill here, advertising and soliciting of bids can be done on the website. But generally, most of the notice requirements for public hearings and certain other requirements are done through newspaper.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hines, in that amendment, going back at the last part of it, it's a requirement of a report to go to the Senate and House Representative chairs of local governments. Is this something that was a concern that was brought forward as far as that the chairs have to have this or that someone in the legislature has to see this? I mean, or is it being done in some other place in state or local state government, I guess it is?
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, that language was recommended to us by the reviser. Originally, we had just asked the reviser to prepare a report, and she recommended that it be sent somewhere to the legislature and recommended this committee and the House committee with the equivalent jurisdiction. So that's what the reviser's office recommended, and we deferred to her.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm sure that the local government chair would love more paperwork, so I guess it's okay.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, the question is on the motion of Senator Scalzi that Senate File 843, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on general orders.
So moved.
So moved. Thank you. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say no. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson, would you like to chair in the next bill?
Good morning. Are you up and Adam?
Is Senator Eaton coming?
Good work.
Okay.
We'll get you all
settled.
Is
Is Senator Eaton here?
Chair balance going on here. So.
Howard, she was here. I don't know where I am.
Senator Wicklund ready, or should we do that, Madam Chair?
Okay.
Do you want to do that? Sure.
That contested case one.
So Senator Wicklund with Senate File 516. Senator Wicklund, good morning.
Good morning.
After a late night.
Yes, I'm trying to get organized this morning. It's been pretty hectic.
And it's a little bit out of turn, so, okay, take your time. Get organized.
No problem. Thank you. No, I'm here today regarding Senate File 516. It is a bill having to do with contested case, judicial review, service, and all parties requirement. When appealing a court decision, an aggrieved person must file a writ of, and I won't even try.
Certiorari.
Thank you. For judicial review to the Court of Appeals and be served on the agency within 30 days of the final decision. This bill would strike the word agency and insert all parties to the contested case. So I will turn over discussion of the bill to the Assistant Chief Administrative Law Judge Eric Lipman.
Eric, what was the last name?
Lipman, sorry.
Lipman?
Madam Chairman, Senators, L-I-P-M-A-N. My name is Eric Lipman. I'm the Assistant Chief Administrative Law Judge for the Administrative Law Division in the Minnesota Office of Administrative Hearings. Madam Chair, would you like me to speak a little bit to the bill?
Please, if you would.
If I could direct Senator's attention to the color handout, I think it would be easiest and simplest to explain it that way.
Do we have that in our packets?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Members have it?
Okay. Yes, I have it here.
So, Madam Chair, Senators, this is a tale of two kinds of cases. If we can take the column to the right, the very good-looking people below Governor Dayton and his cabinet. We do contested cases in a wide variety of matters for state agencies and local units of government, 120 different state agencies and local units of government. I've given you a sample here. So real estate broker licensing, the citation that a DNR conservation officer might give, Veterans Preference Act claims, the routing of utility lines, the revocation of sales tax permits. While these are matters within the jurisdiction of various executive branch agencies, those commissioners are busy. They don't want to have a trial. And so they hire our office to conduct a trial, find the facts, apply the law, and then submit a report, make a recommendation to one of those good-looking people at the top right there to make the final decision in that case. So recommendation from an ALJ, the final decision by the commissioner. And the statute works pretty well in those kind of cases, which is about 90% of our office's work, because if someone doesn't like what that commissioner has decided, under the statute as it's now written, they'll file with the Court of Appeals. I'd like to appeal that decision. I think the commissioner was wrong. And they'll serve a copy on the agency, okay, because the commissioner and his or her department or their board is the real party in interest. Those are the two litigants to the case, and they're fighting, and they disagree, and we'll have the very smart and good-looking people across the street sort that out at the Court of Appeals. The problem is that in 10% of the cases, we stand in the shoes, the less good-looking people in the left-hand column, which are my colleagues in the Administrative Law Division, and we also have a picture there, some workers' comp judges, so there are only 10 of us in the Ad Law Division. In some of these kinds of cases, and this is not an exhaustive list, but it's some, risk level determinations for sex offenders, the campaign violation cases of which regrettably probably some members here are familiar with, the disputes under the Fair Campaign Practices Act, discrimination claims or boundary adjustment claims. We stand in the shoes of the agency, and an ALJ, after the trial, will make the final decision. And then if there is an appeal, they think that one of our judges got that decision wrong. Under this statute, we get joined in the litigation for the appeal. As a judge, just like we were if we were judges on the district court, if I'm wrong, I'm glad to be instructed by the very clever people across the street. If I'm right and they affirm my decision, I'm glad of that too. But I'm not a litigant. I'm not taking a policy position about whether this result in this case is the right policy or not, or I don't have a policy interest. I'm trying to apply the law to the facts as best I can. And so I'm agnostic. I want to get the law right. I want to get the decision right. But if I'm wrong, I'm content to have it wrong, and I certainly wouldn't want to appeal to the Supreme Court beyond that. Very different for an agency. So what we would like to do is switch the statute slightly to make what we think is a little better wording, which is if you're unhappy with the decision that you get, you serve the other people that you were litigating with in the trial below. Don't join me in the litigation as a judge, because I don't care about the particular result in the case, only that I got it right or not, and I don't want to have to hire the Attorney General to go and make an appearance at the Court of Appeals, because we don't. We're not going to judges don't defend their don't litigate their decisions at the Court of Appeals, and we don't want people spending time sending us papers and spending money and resources for a result that's not really very appropriate. And so while the dollars to our office are not that large, it's about $1,000. I think the fiscal note we put at $2,000 a year is a little high, but that gives you about the sense of the dollar amount. But it's confusing to the public. It's a waste of time. We are throwing away the money. We're asking people to do things that aren't particularly sensible, none of which I think is a credit to our process. We want to save time and money and do things that are useful. So I know it seems very, very, very small beer, but I think to inspire public confidence, we were hoping you'd change a few words in this statute, and I'm grateful for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lippman and Senator Wicklin. Are there any questions? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Your Honor and Senator Wicklin, are there any groups, legal groups, that are contesting this at all?
Madam Chair and Senator Hall, I've heard of none. So I'm not aware of any controversy. The bill has been posted for a time. The committee was generous enough to put us on its agenda. We're steaming along to government operations in the House. I haven't heard anybody who is concerned about this. In fact, I think it would be a relief, which is not to have the chore to send papers and filings to someone who is not going to join the litigation ever. We're just not going to make an appearance.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, I've not heard from anybody in my preparations for hearing
Madam
the bill.
Chair, may I also welcome back the Honorable Judge Lippman, as he used to be a legislator here in the House of Representatives, if I remember correctly.
Madam Chair, Senator, you do remember correctly. I've been promoted.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
We call that demoted.
And I want to say it was probably at a time when I was not in the House of Representatives, because I do not remember you. But
of course, he came from the House, so maybe that was a promotion.
Are there any other questions? Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair and Judge Lippman, you did a very excellent job explaining what looks like a complicated process. But is this unique to Minnesota? Is this something that's fairly uniform in terms of what you're trying to do? It seems like a much more efficient method what you're doing. Tell me about how you compare a little bit with other states that in this process.
Judge Lippman?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chairman, Senator Dahl. I'm not aware of any of the other 26 states that have what they call a central panel. The concept here is that rather than having a judge that only works for one agency, public confidence is inspired by having someone who is independent of the agency resolve these sorts of disputes. I think that there can be greater public confidence because my check and whether I get paid or not, or my promotion or my working circumstances aren't dependent upon whether I rule for or against the DNR. I think that makes for public confidence for the litigants who appear before us. I'm not aware of any of the 26 other states where judges participate in the litigation in the appeals of their decisions. I think it's unseemly, and because of that reason, we don't do it, but we're incurring this modest expense and using the time of the Attorney General's office, again, not particularly productively, either to explain that we're not going to participate in the litigation and each time that this happens. And so I think it's wasteful, confusing, sort of dumb, and I think this would be a great opportunity to fix it.
Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Judge Lippman, you have moved up from the dog pound. That was a term that we used in the House. You mentioned 10% of cases, and can you give me an example of what one of those cases may have been that part of it as far as...
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, the left column...
That's all the cases?
Are examples. It's not an exhaustive list where we have final decision-making authority. I thought it was a representative list. To do all the types of work for the various 120 different agencies, all the types of different cases that we get would take several pages. I didn't want to burden the committee. But these give you a flavor of the robust range and the complexity and importance of the kinds of matters that we're presiding, whether in the left column, whether I'm entering at least a final decision for that part of the process, or whether in the 90% of the cases, the right column, I'm making a report, findings of fact, conclusions of law, a recommendation, dear commissioner, I think this is the right result, and then the commissioner decides, can modify, can reverse, can start all over again, can do whatever they see fit. But the right-hand column is representative of the much larger chunk, but there are significant issues as to which I'm making at least the first call on the left-hand side.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
What I guess I was looking for, Judge, was an actual case.
Oh.
A name of a case or a name of a situation that maybe we as legislative senators would remember and made Star Tribune headlines. Anything?
Flipman.
Well, I think in any of the, Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, any of the campaign violation cases that you have thought about that have been litigated, whether they're false literature claims or corporate contribution claims, any of those things would be in the middle of the left-hand column. One, or if it gets to a panel of three judges, would make a final decision and an appeal would be beyond from there. I think the other cases, if any of your townships have become incorporated into a city or detached from a city, we're not participating in that process, you know, whatever might be within your respective legislative districts, those are likewise final decisions at the bottom of the left-hand column. I think those would be good examples. Or if a sex offender who has been designated a level 3 says that they should be a level 2, any of those things for which you receive community notification, they have the high school meeting, those types of claims would be litigated in front of our office, and we'd make a final decision, at least the first cut, as to what the appropriate level for that offender would be.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Judge Lippman, the situation in my area where Monticello Township did not want to be annexed by the city of Monticello, they would be asking you to come in and be the overseer and that dispute.
Madam Chairman, Senator Anderson, if the the city, and I'm not precisely familiar with the Monticello situation, but if the city wanted to say we want this adjacent part of the township adjacent to the city, we want to deliver city services to that region, we're going to develop that, it's part of our comprehensive plan, and the township objected, those parties would litigate in front of an administrative law judge after receiving a referral from our in-house client, the Minnesota Boundary Adjustments Unit. They refer over to the Administrative Law Division to conduct a trial because, again, the staff people of the Boundary Adjustment Units don't want to have to sort them out. They have the parties come in and litigate. The Administrative Law Judge will say the boundaries are here, and if we've got that wrong, that would be a case where that would be appealed onto the Minnesota Court of Appeals. But one of the judges who has decided the boundary is going to be here and not there doesn't have a policy stake in where the boundary should be, and we wouldn't participate in any appeal in the litigation to try and defend the decision below. Very different than if a cabinet minister has a policy reason for deciding a case in a particular way. They may well say, for the larger purpose, we want to participate in the appeal, and we don't want to lose this one. I don't have that same kind of policy stake because I wear black rather than red or blue or green.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Lippman. And any other questions, members? If not, Senator Wicklin, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to move Senate file number 516, and I do not know where it is supposed to be.
We would be recommended to pass and referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Okay. Thank you.
So Senator Wicklin makes the motion for Senate Files 516 to be recommended to pass and referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Do we have to?
I know.
You are on Judiciary. Is there no questions? All of those in favor say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
And now Senator Eaton is here, so we will go back to Senate File 468. Still finding myself saying those.
Mr. Lee,
always a pleasure.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Senate File 468. It's the essentially discontinuance of the Hennepin County Soil and Water Conservation District. And I will let the experts explain it to you.
Okay, and today we have Rosemary Lavin.
That's correct.
Assistant Director from the Hennepin County Environmental Services. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Rosemary Lavin, Assistant Director with Hennepin County Environmental Services. Hennepin County is seeking the ability to petition Bowser for the discontinuance of the Hennepin Conservation District and the transfer of its duties and authorities to the county. The county is in somewhat of a unique position, given the history with its Soil and Water Conservation District. In 2003, Hennepin County began delivering a majority of conservation services in the county via the county's Environmental Services Department. County staff have been delivering the remaining statutory-based services since 2007 through an agreement with the Hennepin Conservation District. The Soil and Water Conservation District structure works very well in many counties of Minnesota. However, it's no longer functioning well in Hennepin County. We're proposing this change in 383B for Hennepin County only. While we're proposing to discontinue the district, we have a proven record in place to ensure the continued delivery of conservation services in the absence of a soil and water conservation district. We've spent much time working on the development of the language in this bill with the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and you should have in your packets a Bowser Board resolution from December of 2012. The resolution acknowledges the unique situation in Hennepin County and directs Bowser staff to work with Hennepin County staff on the development of the bill language that you have in front of you that would allow for the petition process. One of the critical statutory soil and water conservation district functions that would be transferred to the county in this process is the implementation of the Wetland Conservation Act. The county feels very strongly about the continued implementation of this act and has done a good job keeping up with a significant caseload that Hennepin County sees. The Hennepin County Conservation District currently survives on state grants without any staff, and there are not sufficient resources available for the district to carry out this function on its own. Making this change will streamline government and the delivery of conservation services at a time when difficult decisions need to be made about reductions in expenditures and in government. It saves money. Significant taxpayer dollars were saved when the county began delivering the majority of conservation services through its Environmental Services Department. In addition, it will allow the money spent on administration of the district board to be put into on-the-ground conservation services. This helps to reduce the complexity and improve efficiency of government by providing a small reduction in the number of organizations that are involved in soil and water resource management. Hennepin County has 45 cities and 11 watershed organizations, all of which have a role in soil and water resources. This has no impact on the 11 watersheds that are currently in place in the county. The conservation work will be accountable to a more visible board, the Hennepin County Board, allowing for greater transparency of this work. The Hennepin County Board is positioned to receive input directly from citizens, cities, and watershed organizations on needed conservation services. Environmental issues remain high among the priorities for our county board. Over time, the district has delivered fewer conservation services directly and is on a path where it simply cannot carry out its functions, such as the Wetland Conservation Act, on its own. The county has found a more cost-effective, efficient, and transparent way to deliver these services, and this bill will provide a way to ensure the continued delivery of the services and the protection of our natural resources. I'd also like to point out that in your packets you have support letters from the Elm Creek and Pioneer Serra watershed districts. Those are the watershed organizations that are in the western portion of the county and depend significantly on these conservation services. And you also have a support letter from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I neglected to present my A1 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Eater. They're being distributed now.
It's just technical. Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
It's a technical amendment. Essentially, on page 1, line 23, we have just the word board there after it designates two separate boards. So we would like to replace that with Board of Water and Soil Resources, which is Bowser. And then on page 2, line 25, we'd like to delete 103B.201 and insert 103C.201. It was just a mistake.
Okay. So does everyone have the amendment, and are you ready to vote? Anyone have any questions on the amendment? Senator Peterson.
Not on the amendment. We can adopt.
Oh, okay. Okay, then we'll adopt. Move the amendment. Senator Eaton?
Please.
Move the amendment A1 to Senate File 468. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Amendment adopted. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This has been a process where the Hennepin County has been providing this service for quite some time by a Hennepin County staff person, and we're just allowing Bowser to turn it over to Hennepin County unless there is provision in there for it to be returned to reestablish the district if it determines specific goals are not being achieved.
And
if it's not working out.
Senator Eaton, where is that provision? Can you point it out to us?
Subdivision 6, reestablishment 2.22.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions, members, on this provision? Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Eaton, I was just trying to look over the board. I did have one of the board members come and see me this week. I guess my concern is I know that there has been some challenges with the board over time. It looks like they have gotten some new life and new energy, but if indeed we start to change this is really taking citizens, or it appears that it is taking kind of, you know, citizens that have went out, that cared a lot about this issue and that were elected. It's kind of taking them out of the process. So I don't know enough about how this works. So can you help me understand how we can ensure that citizens are still going to be active in the issues that the Water Conservation District takes care of?
Senator Eaton? Or
I will let the...
Okay. Ms. Lavin.
Madam Chair, Senator Hayden, the county board receives citizen input directly on many different issues, environmental issues being one of those. In addition to that, the watershed districts, the managers of the watershed districts, four of our 11 watershed organizations are watershed districts. Those are appointed citizen members, and so they will be providing citizen input on issues. In addition to that, on the water organizations that are governed by elected officials, they typically will have citizen committees that advise them as well. In addition to that, we will be able to seek direct citizen input through the cities, through hosting forums and other means. But in the structure of natural resource management in the county, there are a number of different avenues where citizen input does come in.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Eaton, and Ms. Lavin, I feel a little ironic that it came off of a debate yesterday. We started talking about elected members and how do we make sure that people that are elected to their constituents are really involved with this issue. And so I'm just wondering if this isn't that the county shouldn't work much harder to give the elected board the resources in which it needs to be able to make the decision so that they can be accountable to the people that elect them, as opposed to throwing it appears that this is kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because kind of each other than the county board, and we live in the largest county in the state, and they have a lot of things that they think about. So it looks like, other than that kind of trail all the way to the top, that there are appointed folks that do this work in the watershed districts, and then there are these kind of advisory groups and other avenues that people can really talk about, but they're going to lose their advocate that they elected in order to work on these issues. Would that be correct, that they would lose their elected official that is helping them to work directly on this, and they would be then giving that to appointed people at an appointed position, or at the very, very top, the county commissioner, which really represents a lot of people and a lot of different issues?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hayden, the truth of the matter is that nobody knows who their soil and water conservation person is, and they get like maybe half the votes of any other elected official in the district and during an election. And essentially, they've just been attending one board. They haven't really been doing the job that they're required to do, and Hennepin County's been picking up the slack. And it's been like 5-6 years, and it's just time for this to get taken care of. I agree with you. I hate taking away any kind of elected body, but they're getting funding that's not being used for what it's not being used. The county's doing it without, and the board is getting the funding. So
Madam.
Senator Hayden.
Madam Chair, it's funny because sometimes I go out and people tell me to tell the president hello because they think I work in Washington, D.C. Right? That this kind of idea that just because people don't know who they are, I mean, sometimes they don't know who we are or what we do, but I'm not quite ready for someone to come in and say that we shouldn't have state senators representing them. And so I just don't know if that argument works for me, Senator Eaton. And to Ms. Levin, how much money does this proposal save?
Are these all the people in the district?
Madam Chair, Senator Eaton, Ms. Levin, how much
Senator
money
Hayden.
Does it save?
I'd have to ask. Do you know?
Ms. Lavin. Lavin?
Yes, Lavin.
Thank Lavin?
You. Madam okay. Chair, Senator Hayden, in terms of eliminating the district, how much money it saves? Well, currently the district is provided about a $25,000 general services grant from the state for their administrative activities. They also get about a $15,000 to $20,000 cost share grant that's used for granting to an entity to do a conservation practice. And then they get another approximately $1,000 for RIM, Reinvest in Minnesota inspections. I mean, that's basically the funding that they get. That funding, essentially the cost share grant, if this change was made, the cost share grant then would be something that the county would issue. The general services grant, the county would not ask for that, would not receive that. So that's for the funding that the district currently gets. When the county made the change of bringing the conservation services underneath environmental services, that saved $250,000 annually to make that change.
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Levin,
Senator Hayden.
It appears that about $25,000 based on what the current operation would be, because you'd be repurposing the other money, and it's about $25,000, I thought I'd heard, that this would save. And I was just thinking about it in the context of Senator Eaton talking about kind of them getting money and them not doing their work. I'm, Madam Chair, I'm really, really concerned about this provision. I think we need to talk much more about this. I think this is an issue of taking away the ability for citizens to talk to their elected official so that they can have influence on decisions that are made, and that this rolls up into a much more bureaucratic process that has appointees. And ultimately, for me, you know, Commissioner McLaughlin represents me and, I don't know, 150, I don't know what it is, 200,000 more people or whatever county commissioners are. And I'm not sure that I want to lose my water conservation district elected official if I should ever have a problem because of a $25,000 administrative save.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Senator Hayden, I guess I wasn't very clear. That's what they're currently being allocated. When the county took over the districts back in 2007, they actually saved $250,000, and they've been doing that ever since. They've just been given the $25,000 kind of primarily for administration-type things. Do you want to elaborate on that, Ms. Lavin?
Ms. Lavin?
Madam Chair, Senator Hayden, I guess one thing that I'd like to add on in terms of the conversation, the current board, and this has been the case for a while, most of the time that they spend in terms of their meetings is really just on administrative activities for the board, addressing paying their insurance, paying their per diems, paying for storage of records. They have not been engaged in a lot of discussions in terms of providing input to the county or to environmental services on conservation practices. They have very little funding in place. They have the $25,000 general services grant. They don't have any staff to actually carry this work out. They carry the work out through a cooperative agreement with the county. Over the years, the county has taken over those responsibilities to ensure that they've gotten delivered. In the time between 2003 and 2007, when the county entered into their cooperative agreement, the conservation district was really struggling with carrying out their Wetland Conservation Act enforcement. They don't have sufficient financial resources to do the work that still is under them. And I think when we come here and we're saying this is unique to Hennepin, this situation is really, this is really unique for us, just given the size of the county, given the fact that we do have 45 cities and 11 watersheds that are all working on natural resource protection, as well as the county, and that there is significant citizen input that is coming into this. This board is no longer in a position to even be able to provide that sort of input. And there's been a turnover in the membership of the supervisors over the past 5 years or so. I think there's been a dozen people that have gone through those positions. They've had a number of times where they've had vacancies. They've had people resign. They've had vacancies. They've had appointments, but there have been times when there have been open positions. It's really been a struggle to have that be a functioning board.
So, Madam Chair, and I'll leave as my final comments. So I got elected on a special election last year, and so did Senator Eaton and others. So even at this level, we have vacancies. People decide to leave for other reasons. We've had a number of them. And so I just am not quite ready, Senator Eaton, to really kind of do away with this. And I haven't been compelled yet by Ms. Lavin, and maybe offline I will be, and maybe, you know, there's some reason to do it. But I have had citizens come to me, and I've had constituents to say that they really want to work on this issue and that this is rather important. And it appears, you know, that the shrinking of their budget and the transferring of the duties are things that maybe we can stop and maybe we can change. And maybe I know in my district there is just a ton of people who want to talk about this issue, and I haven't been compelled yet to think that administratively inside the county that and I'm not at all criticizing the great work that I'm sure you guys do, but I haven't been compelled yet to say that we should take away the avenue that citizens have directly to their elected official to ensure that this work gets done, to go through a bureaucratic process.
Senator Hayden and Senator Eaton, we do have two people on the schedule to testify in opposition to this provision. And I know there are other questions, Senator Hall.
Madam
would you
Chair.
Want to wait?
Madam Chair, I'd just soon wait and hear the testimony. That was
Madam
part
Chair,
of my
to the
question.
Point of Senator Hayden, I'd like to respond, please.
Sure.
The reason that the districts were taken over was because they weren't doing the job. And the funds that they have now is 53% is being used for administrative costs. And continuing to maintain and support an elected board of district supervisors to oversee approximately $38,000 of technical services is just not an efficient or effective use of public funds, particularly in the face of declining state support for the Hennepin Conservation District's programs and activities. So I just wanted to indicate that it's also a matter of we can't afford this anymore.
Senator Eaton, we'll be ready to take the testimony from Mr. Peterson, and if you would like to, of course, stay up if you want at the table, please. If you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson with an EN. I am currently employed as a consulting administrator to the Hennepin Conservation District Board of Supervisors. I've been authorized by the board to provide the following comment, which is basically a summary of testimony District Supervisor Richard Strong gave at the companion bill hearing last Tuesday night, House File 1048. To begin with, the Hennepin Conservation District Board of Supervisors is opposed to Senate File 468 and its companion in the House 1028. I'm going to begin by making the statement that the current Hennepin Conservation District Board is so committed to making it work in Hennepin Conservation District that they have voted unanimously to suspend taking per diem. They're basically working as a citizen elected volunteer citizen board. So they are very cognizant of past expenses that the board has incurred, and they have chosen to invest their limited resources in a different direction. The first point I'd like to make is that there is an existing process in Minnesota Statute 103C, which is the Soil and Water Conservation District law, that allows the voters to dissolve a conservation district. And this particular process was initiated in Hennepin County in 2002, and 74% of the citizens that voted in that general election voted to retain the elected Board of Supervisors. So there is an existing process for dissolving a soil and water district through the voters in statute. Number two, we do not believe it is good government to allow one board to dissolve another board, such as the case between the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners and the publicly elected special purpose district of the Hennepin Soil and Water Conservation District. We believe that this bill will set very bad precedent for all elected boards. And we believe that the Hennepin County Environmental Services has enlisted Bowser to determine the effectiveness of our SWCD among all the SWCDs in the state. We have particularly inquired of the Bowser Board to provide us with a list of criteria that would be used to evaluate the yet-to-be-determined effectiveness of a brand-new elected and refocused Soil and Water Conservation District Board, and none has been provided. We ask, we believe we are capable to achieve the purpose of 103C, and there are 90 SWCDs in the state, and we all come at it from a little different direction, focusing on different priorities and crafting and creating different types of partnerships. We believe we can be successful as well. Providing a county-specific exemption in Hennepin County to a statewide law, we believe, only serves to further complicate an already complex structure of water governance. Currently, all counties in the state have special purpose elected boards, providing a consistency in conservation districts and accountability to the state. Why should Hennepin County be different in this regards? With our current limited funding, the Hennepin Conservation District is refocusing its focus and mission by creating constructive partnerships, including partnerships with Hennepin County Environmental Services and other water management organizations throughout the county. We intend to focus on environmental education and bringing citizen input forth into the other organizations, kind of keeping the citizens connected to the other organizations. We think that's a good central coordinating role for this publicly elected to a citizen board. Soil and water conservation districts are elected by a countywide ballot and serve to focus their attention only on natural resource stewardship matters. With a singly focused citizen representative government body, we believe water quality is better served in the county. SWCDs are the only statewide delivery system that works with private landowners. The county has no obligation to fund the Hennepin Conservation District, and the Hennepin Conservation District Board is determined to implement a responsive conservation program without county funding. It is up to the locally elected Soil and Water Conservation Board to define what their program is. The Hennepin Conservation District Board, recent Hennepin County actions to defund the district show a lack of interest, we believe, in water quality protection. The Hennepin County Board faces a myriad of other political pressures and issues, and we believe that our environment should have a singly focused, publicly elected board. We are willing to admit that in the past, our organizational exposure to the citizens of Hennepin County has been less than optimal and needed. We are in the process of changing this with this brand new board, and right now we do have a staff person, myself, I am a consultant, and we are working to increase our visibility and solicit public input into conservation issues in the county. A few final comments. There are other SWCDs in counties where there are county soil and water conservation boards, but the staff are not necessarily SWCD employees. There's anywhere from 4 to 7. I haven't verified the total number, but there are other examples of where there is a soil and water conservation board, and a soil and water conservation board contracts with or partners with other units of government to provide essential technical services. We ask that you not let this new evolving process be discontinued, and you give us an opportunity to succeed in our new approach to a soil and water conservation district in Hennepin County. Well, that would be it.
Mr. Peterson, just for my own clarification, you are serving as a consultant to the Conservation Board.
Yes, I have a consultant administrator contract with the Hennepin Conservation District Board of Supervisors.
Okay, Senator Eaton. Senator Babbitt.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to understand and clarify something, because this looks to me like a compromise bill, because the way it's laid out is Hennepin County is not dissolving the Hennepin County Soil and Water Board Commission. It's the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, upon petition, is going to review whether the Board of Water and Soil Resources can achieve the goals that they're supposed to achieve. And if they determine that they can't achieve the goals, then I think the witnesses laid out that it's a big county, it's complicated, and that Hennepin County is already doing most of the work. So if they can't achieve the goals, then they would be dissolved. And if at some time in the future they can achieve the goals, then they could be reestablished. So I just seems to me that this is kind of a thoughtful approach to looking at the capacity
of this very small elected body. It also seems like a way to kind of streamline government, really, and make government more efficient. And, you know, if you have a board that basically just does administrative duties and isn't really doing what their purpose is, then we have to look very seriously about whether it should be continued. But in this case, you know, we're not deciding that we're going to discontinue it. Hennepin County isn't deciding. The Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources would decide.
Madam Chair.
Senator, are you finished? Right. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas, I would agree on the streamlining. My concern in, from the testimony is that it sounds like Hennepin County is withholding funds, or I feel like what I'm hearing is they're squeezing out financially, and so they're not able to do what they're called to do. And then we're allowing them to, in a sense, dissolve that group and kind of take over the group. And streamlining, you know, is a good thing. So I have my concerns there, and if this group was and other groups like this around the state are important groups, I'd hate to set a precedence that other counties could do the same thing. They may have similar issues. Instead of improving the group and giving them what they need to do and the authority to do it, if that's why how they're elected, and if they've got a process right now of eliminating that group, which would be to either retain or not retain it, I guess I'm still waving in one way or another.
Well, Madam Chair, just one comment. I think we do have another witness, and we do have another bill. I think that other counties are small, and that having the Bowser you know, with the resources that they're provided on that local level, is probably handleable. I think the difficulty here is that Hennepin County is so large and needs a lot of technical advice that, you know, that they have on staff and that the local Bowser is not able to do. But maybe, is it Ms. Lavin can clarify the withholding money issue that you brought up?
And then we have Mark Zabel and Sheila Vanners who have asked to testify on the bill. And again, members, the House file was passed out of governmental operations and re-referred to the Environment Committee in the House, and that's what would happen here. It will be re-referred to the Environment Committee.
Madam Chair.
If we choose to pass it.
May I also ask Ms. Lavin, if she does, my understanding, and I could be wrong, but does she represent the Board of Commissioners for Hennepin County?
Ms. Lavin. Lavin. Sorry.
Lavin.
Thank you,
sorry.
Lavin. Madam Chair, Senator Hall, I'm here on behalf of Hennepin County to testify in support of the bill. I'm representing, this bill is included in the county board's platform, in their legislative platform, and so I'm here to represent the bill on that behalf.
Thank you.
And then I would like to address the funding issue and how that came about.
Please, Ms. Lavin.
That wasn't a decision that was made overnight by any means by our county board. The situation that occurred was back in 2000. There was a supervisor that was elected to the Conservation District Board that was a former district employee who had been fired. When that person joined the board, there was a lot of turmoil that was created. And over time, there were a lot of accusations made against staff. There were a lot of issues made, a lot of requests for documentation, a lot of problems that were created. Our county board came to the legislature in 2002 to seek to have the supervisors appointed as opposed to elected. That did not pass. In the meantime, there was another election, and there were some other supervisors that were elected to the board. This board member stayed on the board. Turmoil continued. Work was not getting done. The organization was just in shambles. It was not functioning. And our county board made the choice to defund the district at that time because they were funding the district $500,000 a year. And in obligation to the citizens of the county, they needed to ensure that this work would get done. And they were able to then bring those services into the county, into the county's Department of Environmental Services. And as part of that process, they brought over, I think, about 8 people from the district staff to actually carry out that work through the county auspices.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Lavin. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lavin, is that problem supervisor still there?
Ms. Lavin.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, that supervisor is no longer there on the board.
Thank you. Do we have another question before we listen to the other two people? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lavin, so was the $500,000 appropriation ever reinstated to the Soil and Water Board, or has it been they've been operating on a lower amount of revenue since that decision was made?
Ms. Lavin.
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson. The funding has not been reinstated to the Conservation District because the county, in bringing the services under Hennepin County Environmental Services, because they're able to save a significant amount of taxpayer dollars, that funding decision was not reversed.
Senator Peterson.
So thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Lavin, and members of the committee. So it seems like the county, I'm reading the administrative burden here, 53% of the expense and $38,000. So the county withheld money from an elected board and then is using that withholding, in a sense, to justify why the board can't get its work done, is attempting to bypass statute, which I have a problem with. The statute already addresses how we can dissolve these things, and the voters overwhelmingly voted not to. And then to avoid even further local accountability, the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners isn't even going to make the decision. They're going to refer it to the administration to make the decision for them, which is even less transparent and accountable to the people of the district. It seems to me like since that decision was made, the Conservation District hasn't really had a fair chance to be effective. And more troubling for me than that is the fact that it seems like there's every attempt to bypass accountability to the voters of Hennepin County. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Ms. Lavin.
Madam Chair, Senator, the county, I'll address several points that you made there. The county is not required to fund the district. And it made that funding decision. That was not an easy decision for the board to make. But it came to that decision because it had an organization that was not functioning and a strong conservation need in the county. And it made that change, and we're able to deliver those services in a more cost-effective manner through environmental services. In terms of the referendum, there was a referendum that was called for in 2002 by a landowner who was unhappy with the decision that was made regarding his property, so he petitioned to get the referendum on the books. And county voters in Hennepin County residents overwhelmingly support environmental work in the county. And the referendum is very specific in terms of the language. It says, are you for or against terminating the Soil and Water Conservation District? There's not a lot of explanation that goes along with that. What that referendum also was saying was that the voters really wanted to see those conservation services in place. They wanted the conservation activities. And I'm not sure that they necessarily understood what the board was, but they wanted the conservation services. And that's what the county is delivering and is trying to ensure that they are provided. In terms of the decision, the petition process, we worked very closely with Bowser on developing this petition process. And that's Bowser is the oversight agency over soil and water conservation districts, and they wanted to be in a position to evaluate what Hennepin County was doing and make the determination whether or not we were doing a sufficient job to let the soil and water conservation district be discontinued in Hennepin County.
Madam Chair.
Members, I'd like to take the testimony from the two additional people that would like to speak. And then if we're not ready to vote, we will have to lay the bill over. So if we could have Mr. Zabel and Ms. Vanners come forward, please.
Madam Chair, just a comment while they're coming to the table.
Senator
Thank
Dahl.
You, Madam Chair. And I think we still have the Board of Commissioners that do provide that oversight in terms of connecting with the people. So, we can't forget that piece.
And also remember that this is to allow a petition to the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil that it could be changed, discontinued. Mr. Zabel.
Madam Chair, honorable members, my name is Mark Zabel.
Zabel?
That's fine. I am the current president of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts and elected supervisor from the Carver County SWCD. The association opposes this legislation. I'm going to cover a lot of the ground that's already been covered in discussion.
Please don't.
But I would still...
If you can do it kind of succinctly, that would be cool.
I will try to be brief, and I will also try to provide context.
Thank you.
So our opposition is primarily on the point of precedent. We feel that this does set a very bad precedent for SWCDs across the state. Although this legislation specifically identifies Hennepin County, we see no reason why this wouldn't be picked up in future legislation to address other SWCDs. And in fact, in hearing at the House, there was a delete all amendment that was brought forward that would move it to the 7-county metropolitan area. And I see nothing that would build a dam to stop that kind of expansion to all SWCDs. So first, our opposition is to the precedent that it would set. But for the context, some of you may have watched the Dust Bowl on PBS, or you may have read The Worst Hard Time by Timothy Egan. That was the basis for that presentation. And that was really, that disaster was really the birth of the soil and water conservation districts across the United States. It was the birth of a conservation movement. The way that came about, the Hugh Hammond Bennett was giving testimony much like I am here today and was delaying in order for a dust cloud that was coming from the plains to actually move into Washington, D.C. and darken the sky so that he could point to that as the effect of what was going on in the plains. And that was effective in getting legislation passed that then formed the Soil Conservation Service, now called the Natural Resource Conservation Service. Subsequently, the federal government put forward a model statute for the states to adopt, and Minnesota did adopt that statute, which is now 103C, that set out that the federal funds that would be distributed to do conservation work should be directed and prioritized by a locally elected governmental body. That is what soil and water conservation districts are. We are a special purpose district designed specifically to address conservation issues. We have no levy authority. So any funding that we receive is essentially on a handshake. We develop funding. Our main source of funding is from counties. We also receive funding in form of grants, both, as was referred to, a general services grant that comes to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We now call that conservation delivery grant. We also apply to grants that are competitive. So Clean Water Fund granting that is out there now is a target for us. We apply and put forward specific projects that we then implement to put conservation on the ground. And then finally, we also do contract for services work with other local units of government. So in the metropolitan area, in my home county, we have contracts with city to do erosion and sediment control inspections on construction sites. And we are paid by the city for those services. So we have essentially three separate sources of funding that we apply. None of those are based off of an authority to levy on our own behalf. And finally, I would like to address the cost savings issue, and I hope this isn't a bit too over the top, but I'm going to present it, and that is what was presented in testimony at $43,000 or $38,000 in savings, that really, for the Hennepin County budget, that is less than a rounding error. And so to support this board is really a very small amount in that size of county. And it is true that in greater Minnesota, funds counties are smaller, but the funding is also smaller based on the county budgets. I would ask if Sheila has anything that she would like to add. That would be the end of my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Zabel. Ms. Vanners, and please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Sheila Vanney. I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And while our President, Mark Zabel, has spoken to many of our concerns with the bill, I'll speak directly to some of the language in it. For example, in the provisions where the Board of Water and Soil Resources makes the determination for the transfer, the threshold and burden on is really opposite of what it should be, if you will. What the Board of Water and Soil Resources needs to consider, according to this language, is whether the county can take over the responsibilities of an SWCD. And we would argue that really what the case should be whether the SWCD cannot meet the goals of 103C. So that is...
Ms. Manny, yes. Let me interrupt, please. And where would you be referring to in the bill?
Madam Chair, members, it is in Subdivision 2 under discontinuance.
Okay.
So lines 1.17, where the Board of Water and Soil Resources reviews the petition to determine whether progress toward the goals identified in Section 103C can be achieved by discontinuing the Hennepin Conservation District. Our view would be that's a fairly low bar to set, and that really what the case should be is that it should be set out that the current conservation district cannot perform the goals of 103C.
Thank you. Members, did you get the difference? In other words, Ms. Van suggests that the board would determine whether the soil conservation district that's being looked at as being discontinued could do the take care of the responsibilities that they have. Would that be a correct summation?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Continue, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another concern that we have is further on in the language of the bill. The transfer...
Point it out where.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. In lines starting in 2.6 and 2.7, while we maintain the position of a special purpose unit elected board should be overseeing the issues of soil and water conservation district, it is problematic to us that the provisions are in here for the county commissioners to actually transfer the authorities and duties of an SWCD to a department of the county, and it removes the direct oversight of the elected officials. Those are the two concerns that we have specifically to the language in the bill. Again, I won't restate our general 30,000-foot level concerns, but I appreciate the committee's time.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Mr. Zabel.
And honorable members, there is one other point that was brought up that I would like to address before leaving the table, and that has to do with the troubles that occurred around 2000. I would just like to point out that before those troubles had occurred in the 1990s, the Hennepin Conservation District was one of the highest performing districts among the districts in the state of Minnesota.
And that was before the election of the
yes.
One member? Thank you. Questions? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, in all of this discussion, and I can appreciate how we structure government and how people need to be connected to government and so forth, but really when we get down to it, what I'm most concerned about is are the mission that we are trying to do here in terms of soil and water conservation, are those goals being met? And it sounds to me that in the last 10, 12 years, under the direction of the Hennepin County Department of Environmental Services, that they are being met, and that we want to avoid a dust bowl. That should be the underlying mission. Regardless of turf wars, can we meet those needs for our environment, our water, et cetera, and do it in an efficient manner with the best use of taxpayer dollars? That, to me, is more important than control here. So I don't know if anybody wants to weigh in on that. That's kind of my take.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I'll just make a comment, and I have asked the chair to just lay this bill over because we have other committees that we have to attend this afternoon and give the party some time to discuss some of these suggestions. But I feel like we shouldn't be afraid to change. You know, if maybe when the Soil and Water Board, when Bowser's were founded, there was a really strong need for somebody to pay close attention to this. And I would think that Hennepin County and Ramsey County in particular, I'm more familiar with Ramsey County, that people are on board now and know that we have to do the conservation. We have to protect our water and our soil and our environmental sources. And there's just a real strong ethic, and the citizens are really behind that as well. Also, I just have a philosophical perspective on elected boards. I think elected officials should be doing policy. That's our job. And that if the job is purely technical, that the policymakers can hire people to do, then I think they should be appointed advisory committees or hired employees. And that's just a philosophical thing. We do have a lot of levels of government. And at some point, you know, maybe our county coroners or our county auditors were seen as more policymakers. Then I'm using those as another example of positions that I think should be elected. And we do have people that come forward, counties that come forward and say to us and ask us to authorize it, or they go to the voters and say that really these jobs need to be performed by professionals. And we have an oversight process, and that is our county board. Those are our elected officials that have those duties. So in this case, you know, I would put that under consideration is, and just narrow it to Hennepin County, because I think other counties are very different in their scope and their capacity and in what their citizens want. But in this case, you know, is this really a policymaking board, or really is this a technical carry out the duties that are outlined in the state, and we need expertise to do that?
Senator Peterson. And then I think,
Madam Chair, I understand we're going to lay the bill on the table. I just wanted to say for the record, I know, Senator Johnson, you'll be particularly concerned about this. And I know the Anoka County Soil and Water Conservation District is here to express some of their opposition as well. I know they didn't get to testify, so I just thought I would make that statement on their behalf.
Oh, Madam Chair?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I don't know that we had anyone else on the list, did we, Justice?
There was no one else that had requested to be.
No, I'm not asking. I just wanted to state for the record that they are here. And that
who's here?
The Anoka County Soil and Water Conservation District.
There's a difference between members between tabling a bill and laying it over. If the chair just lays it over, that means we'll bring it back. And if people did not get a chance to testify, they're welcome to come back. People who did get a chance to testify, you don't have to. If you table a bill, then you really vote to table. There's no discussion, and then you have to vote to bring it off the table. So I just wanted to make that distinction.
I don't remember what
and
I said exactly.
You said lay it on the table. So it was confusing.
Okay.
I think it's confusing when you use that.
Senator Peterson,
I didn't
bring up Anoka County because I didn't hear about it until this morning. That Anoka County had also testified in the House, I believe. But I know that I would be talking to Anoka County people.
Madam Chair,
Senator Eaton.
Commissioner Opat would have been here, but he has a sick child. So I would like him on the list for the next time we discuss
thank
this.
You. And with that, thank you, everyone, for your testimony and questions. And this House file or Senate file 468 will be laid over.
And Madam Chair, then we also would have to take up Senate File 804 on Monday.
Thank you.
Oh, so the meeting will be adjourned. We will take up 804 on Monday. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.